Welcome. It is your weekend Managing the Grid podcast. This is your host, Gabe Lesra, and I'm here to break down a very, very dispiriting Real Madrid performance. I'm joined by Kian Sobhani. Kian, how's it going?
I'm doing okay. Doing okay.
Had some that's good.
Time to mull it over, think it over, step away. I watched the right after I watched Eibar, and then I watched Malaga right after, and the whole time I was just thinking about our game. I couldn't even focus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been my day. And Omar Vind, how are you coping? What's your self-care? Self-care regimen?
I mean, I've kind of had to put my emotions aside because I'm writing a tactical review for Outside of the Boot for the first time in a long while. I mean, I had to choose this match, right? Like, to write one in, like, two months. I sent them the email, so there's no backing out after I saw the result. And so I rewatched the entire match. And so that was painful. And, like, I'm doing video editing right now. I'm halfway through the process. So, like, I haven't really had time to be, you know, angry or anything. I mean, I had a little bit. I went on Twitter and I ranted a bit, but really, it's just been trying to analyze this match objectively.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to go down that path with you during this podcast because literally, like that, like, if that's true, then this is when you're talking about it right now is going to be the first time that you get to actually deal with it. Of course, we're talking about Real Madrid's shock defeat today at the hands of Girona 2-1. I don't know what else to say. I mean, like, obviously we have tons to say, but, like, I mean, where do you start with something like this? This is a catastrophe for Madrid in a weekend where Barcelona won in a tough matchup against Athletic Bilbao, and Madrid is at 8 points, and they've never, you know, I saw a stat floating around today that Madrid has never come back from 8 points down to win La Liga. I'll also note that I doubt that Madrid has been 8 points down in October before. Normally, like, if you go to an 8-point deficit in December, it's different, but, you know, that's very little comfort after this dispiriting ass game.
It is crazy. Like, it was just bad. It was bad. It's not even just that we lost and we got unlucky. Like, Girona fully deserved it. We were a mess trying to cope with everything they were throwing at us, like, high up the pitch with their press and their ability to just throw us off guard, and it was just, you know, what's most shocking to me is that this team 2 months ago looked like it could do no wrong.
Yeah.
And every single one of those fundamental things that it was so good at, like breaking your press and pressing cohesively, you know, themselves, it's as if, like, that has abandoned them completely. Like, there's a lot there. Like, we can kind of discuss and break it down why, but it's shocking to me that we even have to talk about it because it was at such an elite level just a few months ago.
Yeah, I mean, you noted that on Twitter a couple of times, like, because, you know, you watch this match and it's just the errors that they were making in all parts of the pitch are fundamental and low, like, it's low execution value errors. Stuff like, you know, just Marcelo in the first half passing the ball to the other team over and over again, or, like, losing the ball generally in dangerous positions on the pitch. I mean, the Eibar goals didn't exactly come from that, but they absolutely could have. And Eibar could have scored, you know, four against Madrid today. And it was shocking. It was the kind of errors that the players that are much better than that, right? Like, Luka Modric was giving up balls all over the pitch. It was just shocking to watch him struggle like that, and there's not a good explanation for it I don't think, unless you've got some nuance tactically, but I don't see anything why there would be a tactical nuance that can explain fucking Marcelo passing the ball to the other team at fucking midfield. Like, there's no one around you and you just lay off the shit pass. I mean, like, I don't see a tactical issue there. It's just an execution one.
I mean, yeah, so there's definitely that. Like, I do have some tactical things to say, but it's worth acknowledging that, you know, even if there was no tactics, like, from Hirona at all, we would have been giving the ball away anyway, all other things being equal. So it just feels like that ever since we won the Super Cup and we felt like, you know, we're on top of the world, we're the defending champions of this many trophies, there's just been this sense of complacency. And in that, we just can't lose, right? Like, this feeling of invincibility that we just go into a match and we're going to trounce any opponent because we're the two-time defending European champions. And I think also the amount of times we came back from a deficit or from a draw and went on to win the game or went on to equalize, I think that also has harmed our mentality a little bit, because when we went 1-0 up, you would have thought we were 5-0 up. It was just horrible. And the way we just lax, it was so lax. We just gave up the game within 4 minutes. 4 minutes, Hirona scored 2 goals. And the defending on those goals were just horrible. Like, it's just individual errors. And there's no excuse for that. And
it's errors not just of, like, technical execution, but yeah, also of literally just wanting it and, like, getting back. Like, the especially on that second goal, you know, the rebound that the ball took to the guy who hammered it in, the pass, there were people who could have gotten and covered him, but instead there was kind of like this lax jogging and that allowed for that play. And it is absolutely inexcusable. And on the other goal, like, obviously it was very beautiful and well executed by Hirona, but like, there also was like a number of different things where, for example, Nacho, like, instead of kicking the ball hard when it bounces off of him, he just kind of taps it trying to get it away from him. I mean, like, it's just these lack, there's kind of this lack of basic footballing energy, basic footballing mentality that was in these, that was in the game today, that was fucking inexplicable. Like, I can't understand where these guys' mentality, where their heads were going into this match. Like, we talked on Wednesday about how this was, or Thursday, about how this was going to be a really tough match because of, among other things, all the really amped up political stuff that's going on in Spain. And the stadium was full of people just roaring. Like, they wanted Madrid's head. And like, if they can't get up for that game, like, what are they getting up for? Yeah, I don't understand.
And right, like, after we conceded as well, I mean, there was some urgency, right? We picked it up a little bit, but it was nothing like last season. We were just desperately trying to get a goal because, again, I feel like we have this attitude that, oh, we're always going to come back because last season we did it, so goals are just going to come. And, like, Lucas Vazquez, who's been such a reliable super sub in the past two seasons, he was running the ball out of play. He couldn't cross the ball properly. Same for Asensio. And then tactically, so now moving to the tactical side, I think Hirona did things that kind of capitalized on all of this. So they pressed very well. They counter-pressed very well. So their structure was very sound. They applied pressure in all the right areas, and they were very consistent in doing that, apart from a couple occasions, including our goal. And that, combined with our lethargy and our inability to string passes together, it was just a disaster for us defensively. So, you know, looking at it that way, it isn't a surprise to see the scoreline as it was.
Yeah, I mean, look, unforced giveaways, and we're talking about players like Modric, who his passing accuracy was, you know, below his season average today, but you could tell, like, you know, there were moments where there was no one around him, and he would give the ball away, and it was uncharacteristic of him. And I had noted in the 19th minute that up until that point, Real Madrid had given the ball away 4 times out of their back line just because of Girona's press. And by the 22nd minute, they had already added 3 more giveaways in the span of 3 minutes. And it was just snowballing. And I'm not sure what it was. Like, you even Ohm talked a bit about the counter press too. Like there was that one play where Isco had this beautiful roulette. I think it was like just Benzema was in the box and he there was some shots for handball, but it wasn't a handball. And then he passed it to Isco. Isco did this really nice roulette coming out of the back. I'm sure you remember. And then obviously like that's all that happened. Like it didn't go further than that because he was closed down by like three or four players. And everyone was like, oh my God, Isco's roulette. And the commentators kept showing. I was like, what are you guys really, really talking about here? The reason Isco couldn't go any farther was because he was just completely swarmed. And I thought Isco was probably our most press-resistant player in this game, but he couldn't, like, amazing play from Isco, but really the context of that was that he just couldn't escape it, and there was a reason for that. He was getting swarmed, there were no outlets, and Girona did this really well. You know what's... I know you want to jump in,
That's fine, it's fine.
I think it's interesting is that, you know, a lot of people were saying, you know, if teams were smart, they would watch Kiki Setien's blueprint and how Betis won at the Bernabeu, and they defended, and they took advantage late in the game. It's interesting that Girona didn't win that way at all today. They completely, like, turned that upside down and pressed high and left a lot of open space in behind their midfield, which theoretically would be suicidal against a team with Isco and Modric and all these players. But Real Madrid rarely ever took advantage of that. Like, I think they, on the goal, obviously, there was a great counterattack leading to Isco's goal. Apart from that, they just couldn't take advantage. And, you know, for all the, you know, last season we were talking about, oh, it doesn't matter what you throw at Real Madrid, Zidane has a plan for it. And I don't know, I think this one may have caught him by surprise, to be honest.
Yeah, and speaking of how we handle presses, right? Like, we're used to seeing, because the way Girona presses, like, they were in a 5-4-1, and their wingers moved up with the striker, and they were narrow. So they were kind of pressing in, like, a 4-3-3, and their fullbacks were man-marking our fullbacks, and their central midfielders were man-marking our central midfielders. And we had four central midfielders versus three of theirs. And so what we usually do, right, is you just see this really intense, fast, just everyone comes deep and they're interchanging positions. We've got these passing triangles. Whereas today it was like one player coming to aid Kroos, who was deep in possession, or the center backs in possession. So Girona could, like, they could man mark that player and protect all the guys who are sitting up the pitch. So instead of having that really fantastic deep movement with everyone interchanging and just completely twisting the man-marking scheme inside out, our movement was lethargic. And that's something I'm not used to seeing, even on days when we don't play that well, because that's something that I consider to be so natural for us. So the fact that that wasn't there was a concern. Mm-hmm. And Girona was also, like, they were implementing tactical fouling, right? So you talked about Isco's roulette. I think he was stopped because he was fouled. And that happened throughout the game. And there were fans who were really frustrated asking for yellow cards and stuff, but they were all kind of like small fouls where you could sort of get away with it. You could be like, all right, I see how that isn't a yellow card. And I thought they implemented that very well, because there were several times where just our individual ability, we broke past a play and we're like, okay, we're going to break through now. And they held onto their arm or they pushed them a little bit and they fell down. So there was a little bit of that dirty side of the game, but we see a lot of teams employ that, and I think Girona kind of towed the line there very well.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost easier to talk about, like, this is one of those things, that another thing that Girona did right. They had to do a lot of things right to have this result, you know, that's one of them. So is, you know, being lethal when they got their opportunities, and even on top of that, I mean, like, I think it's hard for me to not, like, give them credit for goals when, you know, you're for a lucky goal, like in their second one, when they hit the post twice in not just accidental ways, but like in ways where, like, they were extremely unlucky not to score both of the ones that hit the post in the first half. Those goals, the ball didn't even hit, like, the outside of the post. It wasn't like this kind of classic post shot where not really a great shot, but both of those were just crazy good plays by Girona in the first half to, you know, to bounce off the post. It was the kind of thing where going into that halftime, it didn't feel like Madrid deserved to be 1-0 up. It didn't even feel like Madrid deserved to be, you know, t- tied. It was one of those matches where it felt very much like this side, you know, was getting played off the pitch, but was, you know, it's almost like Madrid was the underdog side who had kind of snagged a lucky goal and was actually getting played off the pitch. It actually felt like this really weird reversal where Madrid was actually like Betis and Girona were just like Real Madrid, actually outplaying and hitting the post and getting super unlucky. It's infuriating because it's almost easier to talk about what Madrid did right in this match than it is to talk about what Madrid did wrong, because it did so much wrong. And, you know, just to try to focus on some of the good parts, like, obviously, I think Isco and Varane were both highlights. I thought Benzema in the first half was a highlight. And that is the end of the list for me. I didn't see anything else that I liked.
Yeah, it's pretty accurate. Like, I think Ol mentioned Kroos, and it dawned on me I don't have a single note on him, and I just think it's because I don't know where he was. Like, he wasn't as dominant in this game. He wasn't really, you know, influencing the game in any particular meaningful direction. I agree with Isco and I agree with Varane. You know, the thing with Varane too is obviously he was not going to prevent, you know, Girona hitting the post or anything, and which eventually Girona started scoring those great chances they had. Him losing him was to me a really big deal. Like,
huge.
I think he would have, you know, Nacho's been great. I don't know, maybe he would have at least thrown Stuani off a bit, and Pons also leading up to that play was really good. And Gabe, you mentioned it was Maffeo in the second half, then no one picked him up. And I think it was Cruz and some other players were jogging back, you know, and could have closed down Maffeo, and that eventually led to the goal, which was offside, but that isn't really in the context of this. It doesn't excuse what Real Madrid were doing defensively. And Varane, like, up until he had left in the half, he had more successful tackles in that half alone than anyone else did the entire game for Real Madrid.
Varane was imperial. Like, he was huge, and he was huge time after time in preventing, you know, a real clear goal-scoring chance. Like, it's the kind of thing where, like, it doesn't show up on the expected goals chart because of the tackle that Varane put in. But if someone misses that tackle, suddenly it's a huge goal scoring opportunity, just like the Stuani first goal. Like, if, you know, Nacho like makes the tackle when he actually does get his foot to the ball, it's a totally different chance, right? Like, and it just it obviously was crippling, but like, it shouldn't be such a lift for this defense. And I don't want to like call out, but I thought Sergio Ramos had a really bad game. I didn't feel comfortable with Kiko Casilla either. I mean, there's a difference between him and Kaylor. And then, I mean, my man, Ashraf, you know, just not was not at the level. At least I did not. This was his worst game for me so far. I thought on the offensive end, where the wingbacks are required to do so much on this team. And, you know, he just brought essentially nothing. He was getting closed down every 5 seconds. Like, he, you would run the ball out of bounds like Lucas Vazquez. I mean, maybe it's just that whoever was playing left back for Girona was great, but I think really it's that Ashraf and Lucas Vazquez both had really bad games.
Yeah, and I mean, Ashraf's like only 18, right? Like, when Danilo was sold, I mean, a lot of people were happy, right? Because Danilo was a really, really unpopular player at Madrid for a variety of reasons. Some of it unfair, some of it fair. I was concerned because I was wondering, well, who's going to come in and replace him? And a lot of guys are like, Ashraf. And while I always believed Ashraf was good, there's always been this question, you know, he's 18. Is he ready to start for Real Madrid in case Carvajal goes out?
Which is, you know, not like an insane idea. Carvajal has had injuries in the past. So, like,
yeah, and it's happening now, right? Like, and also, if Carvajal's off form, which he was this season, can Ashraf step in and compete? And, you know, I think he's done okay up to this point, but this was like a typically tough La Liga game. It was tense, it was tactical, it was fast. And you can see Ashraf was just a little off the pace. He was like, whoa, this guy's pressing me, and he'll just give the ball away. Like, when I was going through the match and I was like, you know, taking clips for like Girona's press, there's one that shows just Ashraf just giving away the ball away horribly, because he just kind of gets freaked out by like three guys surrounding him. And there's a difference between playing with Castilla and Real Madrid, and I just think that it was a mistake not to sign another right back or sell Danilo in the first place and just kind of throw Ashraf into the spotlight. And just...
I mean, especially, right, considering how good Odriozola has been so far at this season for Real. Like, that is, I mean, like, he is bringing a huge amount offensively, too. So I don't know. I think that the progression of this other really talented young Spanish right back that everyone was linking with Madrid is just kind of another knock on the kind of poor transfer season that Madrid had.
Yeah, I think the whole right back situation was to me one of the more underrated things of the offseason. You know, everybody talks about, like, even if you look at the mentions on Twitter, like when we put out a call for questions for this podcast, it was all about Morata and James and all. And, you know, like, barely anyone talked about the right back situation because I was surprised about the whole thing. But when we sold Danilo, I was like, oh, okay. Well, you know, it probably won't be astronomically hard to sign a decent right back for Carvajal that could provide what Danilo brought to the table and more. And then I did get nervous, you know, closer to the season when we didn't sign anyone for that position because, you know, this is coming from someone who watched Ashraf almost every week with Castilla last season. I thought he was really good. I in no way did I think he was ready. And but then I essentially gave Zidane the benefit of the doubt because it was Zidane, and, you know, if he saw something in Ashraf and he thinks it, but I don't understand why he doesn't get a stepping stone the way Llorente did and the way
Vallejo did.
I don't see the rush. Why was there a rush to bring him in now? Like, you could have delayed this for, if you want to, literally, you could have delayed it for at least 3 years. It just seems so rushed to me. I didn't get it. And I, you know, Gabe, you're right. He was a black hole offensively, to be blunt. He's been a black hole pretty much every time. We all understand his pace is amazing. He gets forward. He can go from right back to right striker in, like, record time. But when he gets there, I still haven't seen, I think, since the Tottenham game, I think I've seen a total of 2 dangerous crosses that he's put in. And I think him and Teo are two, like, ones that still really don't understand the difference between a cutback and a cross and a weighted pass and, you know, what to do. They just kind of hit it in. And you know, there was a lot of criticism about the subs. I was kind of scratching my head trying to figure it out. I kind of got the Lucas one. Like, we know Lucas comes in every game, but I kind of got it in this context because we don't have Danny and Zidane, and Zidane probably just wanted to bring an extra something from the right flank that Ashraf wasn't bringing, but it just, there was probably other ways to do it. But, you know.
And the Marcelo, I mean, look, the Marcelo one, he hadn't been great, but he was actually growing into the game, I thought, and, like, his issues were more in this kind of clearly unfocused, but you felt that he was getting more focused and, like I said, growing into the game a little bit in the next, you know, when Madrid went 2-1 down, which is infuriating by itself, but, like, it's also not the moment to take him off. And then, you know, you're trying to figure out who to bring on for Asensio. And I mean, I don't know what the answer is there. Like, you obviously need to get Asensio into the pitch, but, like, I don't know what the answer is, but I don't know if the answer is taking off Marcelo, who is the kind of person who can kind of create a dynamic moment, who isn't, you know, going to be someone who is going to be obviously marked. Like, that's one of his big advantages that he brings to an attacking band, in that, you know, he kind of overloads a defense and can kind of run at people in a way that you really don't get from someone in that position. And, like, he's been in the past, Marcelo, a spark and a force at the end of these games. I wouldn't have taken him off. That was tough for me. And I was really critical of his performance, and I think you should be. I still wouldn't have taken him off just because of he's so special as an attacking player. And I don't know where you bring in Asensio. I don't know who you take him on for, but he should come on. But I just don't know whether Marcelo is the right person to take off.
I mean, like, I don't know, like, how accurate this. I saw some people on Twitter say that Marcelo wasn't, like, physically 100%, so that might have been why. But I really have no idea whether that's true or not. What concerned me more was the shape it put us in, because Casemiro went back, right? And it was a back three, and Casemiro was, like, our central defender. And two things, right? Like, Casemiro's worst ever game came when he played in that position. And also, I don't think we've ever looked convincing in a 5-3-2 or 3-5-2, however you want to say it. That's the shape we went for, right? And I knew the second we were doing that, right, we were looking to cross, but we'd also lose any access to the center. We wouldn't attempt to go through the center at all, and it would just be getting Lucas and Asensio forward and out wide and asking them to put crosses in. I was just like, well, we've looked uninspiring today, and we have Marcelo, arguably our best crosser, off. So I really don't think this is gonna work. And we didn't really create any dangerous chances from those substitutions. So that whole formation change and putting those players on in the positions that Zidane did didn't make sense to me at all.
When that sub was made, I thought to myself, I think Maffeo is probably looking at it and probably licking his lips. Because up until that point, he was having a great game on the right flank, and we all know how talented he is. And the fact that he was looking at an entire flank of Asensio and Casemiro, you know, it's Asensio is not like a traditional wing back. Like a Conte could just put him there as a left wing back, or you could put him in a 3-5-2 or a, you know, he's going to play high at the pitch, and he has no interest in defending. Like, it's not like you're putting Bale there who can get back and play as a two-way, you know, left wing back of sorts. Asensio was going to play high at the pitch, so obviously Casemiro was going to be spread thin. I don't, you know, it's not like Giroud necessarily punished us for that, but that I was just looking at, you know, obviously shades of Celta, like Ohm mentioned, like one of Casemiro's worst games ever. I know we've talked about this before, but in a scheme where you're facing a scheme that is locked and you can't get through, Ceballos is like a proven player in these situations, and I still don't get why we don't see him.
Go ahead, Om. I'm sorry. That's exactly what I want. Like what I was gonna say also.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we're panicking, right? Like, because it's like Zidane tries all these things, right? He tries to play a more progressive style of football. He tries to penetrate through the center. We try to attack in this balanced way. And then when the chips are down, it's like, all right, well, we just need to go and start crossing as much as possible. Not have faith in that sort of plan. Because really, most people I was talking to on Twitter and what we're talking about now, right, is that you bring Ceballos on, and he's the guy that can unlock plays for Real Madrid, and it will likely come through the center. But it's almost like we just panic, and Zidane says, well, let's just go to the thing that this team knows best and that I know best, and just, you know, we pray and hope it works out. And I think we've gotten to the point where we can really move beyond that now. And also where I think teams are like, yeah, I think we know what Real Madrid is going to do if they're a goal down and it's the 75th minute. We need to start throwing, you know, other things at opponents so we can continue to stay effective late in games.
Such a really questionable strategy when your second best aerial player and arguably your second best or best crosser, right, is not playing because he's injured, right? Like Bale is, if you're going to do this, at least have your, like, you know, 6'2" jumping, like, freak show guy next to your other 6'2" jumping freak show guy. Like, Bale and Ronaldo occupy so much, you know, of the opposition's resources when you're defending a cross that's why other players get in and they score. Like, this is, but in these games, like, who's going to get on the end of this cross from Asensio? Fucking, like, 5'7" Isco? No, he's not. Or, like, right, or, like, Modric at, like, 5'5". Like, this is, like, trying to, like, as if the Pep Barca, like, went to crossing mentality. Like, yeah, they did score from crosses, but they were all tiny. And, like, they couldn't score from crosses against a team with a big defensive line like Real Madrid. And there were a number of big defenders on Girona today, just like there are on a lot of teams. Like, Madrid against Tottenham, when they were looking for that goal at the end of that match, like, I was among many people who were noting how big Tottenham's entire team is. And, like, they're not going to allow an obvious goal from a cross. And I will note also, though, guys, that Ronaldo had a goal that he should have scored. He got a free header in the middle of the box. Like, no one was on him, and he couldn't put it away. So that brings me to another point, which is that on top of all the issues that we've mentioned the fact that the, you know, that the superstar players that are really supposed to step up in these circumstances choked and have been choking all throughout the beginning of the season is not a good omen.
I mean, I agree with that sentiment, but I don't know how easy that chance really was because of the distance Ronaldo was from goal and the angle it was arriving, right? Because, like, it was I don't know how you generate a lot of power. I mean, I understand how he'd redirect the cross better, but I don't know if he could generate enough power to really beat the keeper. I think it would have had to have been a really good header. But having said that, clearly finishing has been a problem this season, and it has been a problem from, you know, for Ronaldo, Benzema, and other players, and that's been a concern. But this match, and I kind of was like trying to shoehorn this in somewhere, is that the reasons we lost this match was sort of different from the reasons we weren't doing well in previous La Liga matches. It wasn't that we were creating a lot,
and
we were missing chances, and, you know, our defense was okay. This was our defense was disastrous. We created an okay amount where maybe we could have scored more, but this time it was really the defensive side that cost us.
Yeah, I agree. No, I mean, like, obviously, like, that's absolutely true, right? Like, of course, I mean, and I don't, I wasn't trying to point out, like, that this was the same as other matches. I think that I was saying, and a lot of, you know, a lot of us have been saying that this was a match where, like, you just can't really, you know, Ohm and Kian, we've talked before about how, like, this team, after these kind of disappointing results, we say all the time, like, look, like, the eye test doesn't line up with the results. The numbers from expected goals don't line up with the result. In this case, the eye test does line up with the results.
The numbers do as well.
The numbers bear that out as well. So, like, this is a game where Madrid deservedly lost to a team that outplayed them and out-hustled them and out-created. And that is inexcusable. It is. It just is inexcusable for a team that is as good as Real Madrid is. I'm not going to say as expensive or as talented, but literally they're good individually, but they're also, we know for a fact that they're good as a team. So, like, it's just inexcusable. And it feels to me like, yeah, there were tactical issues, but it's also like Casemiro, Kroos, and Modric lost 41 balls in this game. That is an inexcusable number for those three players. It's crucial that they do not do anything like that if they're going to win any games against anyone in this league.
You know, like, I wonder if we have the sample size now to make the claims. Like, I think we kind of do. It's weird. Like, this was our best available 11. This is, I think, like, two players different, Casilla and Ashraf, from the one that steamrolled Juventus in the final. I'm not sure what is going on. Like, we see all these eye test things, we see the stats, and yet you just have to figure it's mental, because there's no way that all these players just kind of lost their way in such a short amount of time.
Right.
Something is off, and I just tweeted that, like, just literally, something is off, and I don't know what it is.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, I know, like, a lot of people are going to tune into this show for us to tell you what Madrid needs to do to fix it. But, like, there is not a one-size-fits-all solution to this. There's not a player that you can just bring in that'll fix all of this that's not named Lionel Messi or Neymar. Like, there just isn't, right? Like, a one-size-fits-all solution to this problem. So, like, it's going to require a team-based solution that sees Madrid improve on a number of areas and crucially improve mentally. Like, that is the crucial area, in at least when you look at this match. Like, I actually was saying, like, previously, like I said previously, I didn't see huge areas of concern. Like, obviously there was a little bit of concern from, as Owen pointed out, you pointed out, from minute 75 on, if Madrid is trailing or tied, you kind of know what they're going to look like. That predictability is bad. There needs to be a way to fix that. But other than that, before this game, I didn't see anything that was obviously an issue. This game has presented just a whole host of issues that need to be fixed. All of them need to be fixed if the team is going to be competitive. Because right now the team isn't competitive. It's not at the top of its game, but it's also not, like, it's not any way would we consider this team a team that could go into Paris and beat PSG right now. I don't think that's true.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, because up until this point, we'd kind of identified, like, thematic problems that ran throughout after the Super Cup, through all the games, and we're like, well, if you fix this, this, and this, we should be okay. And it was mainly about, you know, some tactical things, the finishing, just cleaning up our defending, like very fixable things, and that you're like, in time this will come. But this match is just like screwed all of that up, because it's like you said, presented a whole host of new problems, and Zidane's gonna have to sit down, and he might have had a clear plan on how to fix this, and now he's gonna sit down. Now, I wouldn't blame him for being a little confused now about how to move forward, because this game was just so different from any of the games I've seen us play this season. And you know, I tell our listeners, it's okay to sort of be at a loss for words here, because all the problems that we had now are completely different from the problems we had before. It's like everything flipped on its head. So if we're having problems everywhere, it's just, well, I don't know. I don't know how to solve this. Like, does anyone know how to solve this? We just got to see how it plays out.
Yeah. And I mean, that is simply, that's it. And we have to, so, and we're going to get to your question shortly, but I would also note that there is, other than today, sort of, there's no reason to believe or yet to have a panic attack about Zidane's ability to fix this, I think, because one of the big problems that Madrid has had historically has been having a quick trigger finger. And having a quick panic trigger with when it comes to coaches, mm-hmm. I think that is an issue. So, like, to the people who are already, you know, saying, and who, let's be clear, the same people that are emailing us or tweeting at us or whatever, saying Zidane out, all this stuff, are the same people that were tweeting us saying Zidane out after every mediocre result so far this season, when we were saying we actually think the team's okay. So now that we're saying the team's not okay, like, these people are going to get only louder. And I think it's important to remind everyone that in previous seasons, we've seen Madrid have terrible results and have horrible, make horrible decisions based on this kind of quick trigger finger and disregarding and kind of distancing themselves from long-term projects based on, you know, one or two matches. And that's not at all, in my view, the correct way to proceed forward.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, I wonder kind of like if there is any silver lining out of this, which is really, really hard to take out. But maybe this team needed to hit rock bottom or just really get slapped in the face. And a reason to
I wondered about that.
Like, it wasn't like against Betis, like, where you can just come up after the game and say, well, if Bale doesn't hit the post, or if Benzema doesn't miss, and, you know, these chances will come. They needed maybe something like this to really figure it out. Because it's really interesting to see the contrast and the reactions in the players in Zidane. It's always so different, because Casemiro was like, we're worried. We played bad. We're all worried. And then, you know, Zidane's twist on it is always, no, we played good. We'll be fine. but I'm not... Obviously,
I would also say that, like, I think that Zidane's whole thing is to say that and project confidence. So,
I mean, that's just him. But my point is, like, that the players react the opposite is kind of just telling the fact that they're obviously aware. Like, it's, and Zidane will say it a certain way because he's always been extremely diplomatic, and he won't really dive into tactical details. He never has. He could just completely avoid it. But I'm not putting it past him to find a solution, because he surprised us so many times in the past, both tactically but also just going into games and asserting dominance over a team that, you know, was favored over us. So maybe this something was needed. 8 points is a lot. I don't know if it's going to happen, but... I guess I'd be surprised, but I'd be worried if the team doesn't hit the gear soon that they haven't hit yet.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very possible that you'll see a change in attitude from the players. Like, some of the players came out saying, look, we are extremely disappointed, we're upset. And then they all projected this belief, like, that, yeah, we are going to turn this around, we have the ability to do this, we will do this. And they seem very kind of united and confident, which is exactly what I want. I want them to be saying, we're really pissed because we fucked this up and we're going to turn around and make it better. And I don't really care what Zidane says to the media about how everyone played, because he's not Mourinho. He's not going to be like, man, like, you know, Marcelo, not so good, like, really not my guy, and then, like, start, like, talking about starting Teo or something like that, like what Mourinho would do, right? Or Mourinho would go out and, like, blame the referees for missing the whatever. And Zidane is going to go and be like, look, I think the team's still good, and like project this air of confidence. And I think that is actually the best way to convince, the management to chill, like that's not necessarily for the players. I think it would be crazy to me to think that there'd be that's exactly what he's saying to the players, like good effort, everybody, like in the locker room. Right. Because especially if the players are coming out and say, look, we're fucking pissed. We should be pissed and we're going to get better. That's good. And that's probably related to something that Zidane was talking with them about,
Yeah. Yeah, I look, that's probably true. I don't think Zidane is doing that at all. But again, he is one of the most like tightly-lipped, tightly sealed coaches that I can remember. And doesn't give anything away. Keeps his cards like really close to his, close to his hand. So, but again, I don't think it's inconceivable we see him find a solution to all this. But it is interesting that all these problems are new, like Owen pointed out.
I'm sorry, they're all new?
Today's problems.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, I just wanted to make sure that that's what you said. You didn't say that they aren't new. No, yeah. I was like, wait a minute. Yeah, these seem like new problems. Okay, so with that, I just want to quickly note that on, I think it was Thursday or maybe Friday, I can't really remember, the Catalan parliament declared independence unilaterally from Spain. There have been a whole series of things that have happened. I am doing an interview with with Evan and our friend Ernesto Alvarado, who is a lawyer attorney in Paris, who is expert in Foreign Trade Corrupt Practices Act, the United States statute, and is a practicing lawyer in Europe. So he will come in to talk a little bit about the legal and political ramifications of that stuff on the Let's Fix Football podcast. I'm going to push that interview out to you guys because it's going to have a lot of effect on Real Madrid, because we're going to talk about obviously the Catalan independence stuff. We're also going to talk about the allegations the new Swiss case against Al Khelaifi for bribery. That is fascinating. Al Khelaifi being the chairman of PSG. And we're also going to talk about Tebas in the Spanish league, which is fascinating to me. And I think that is undercovered in the international press talking about Spanish league. So all that, we're doing our interview tomorrow, actually. And it should be out to you guys on your RSS feeds by tomorrow evening, Eastern time. Just FYI, that's why we're not talking about any of that stuff, because I know that is actually something that none of you have heard from us about. And we're going to get to that tomorrow. All right, let's get to your questions now. I hope we covered some of them before. And for all the people who ask questions on the Twitter and Facebook, we're probably not going to get to talk to all of your questions. But the truth is, I'm hopeful that we've answered some of them. So, all right. Sayantan Nandi, these are from our patrons, just to be clear. And if you want to get a guaranteed question every week, you can toss us $5 on our Patreon. If you toss $1, you'll get access to our patron-only show that we record on Wednesday or Thursday every week. And if you toss us $3, we'll get access to the show and we'll follow you on Twitter from the Managing Madrid account. And we'll occasionally retweet you and all that fun stuff. So let us know. Toss us a little bit of money. You want to get your questions answered every single week. All right. Sayantan Nandi asks us, with Cristiano Ronaldo misfiring and Bale injured, is there a lack of consistent goal scorers on the team? So let's just answer that before the second part of this question.
Regarding the goal scorers? Oh, La Liga's over.
No, let's answer the goal scorers part. We'll answer that one in a sec, because a lot of people are asking us that.
Yeah, of course. The answer to this question is yes. Morata gave us 14 league goals off the bench last season. James was not a huge goal scorer, but he was a huge contributor, and he was very efficient in the final third. He was huge. And obviously, while a lot of these, in terms of like Bale and James, these aren't like direct strikers. They have a huge influence on our success in the final third and all that stuff. I think yes. The obvious answer is yes, because we have this sample size. We have Cristiano Ronaldo not being himself. Benzema's missed time, and when he has played, he hasn't been a prolific player. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's not even that much of a question. Obviously, these are issues. So I think the real question a lot of people are asking, 8 points, is La Liga over?
I mean, you got to think that it is. I mean, I'm not going to say, like, that's it. Like, there's zero chance, but there's, like, a 1% or 2% chance. I mean, it's worth noting that when we've been 8 points down, we've never come back to win the league. Usually, like Gabe mentioned, that's later in the season, and we're still pretty early on, so our chances are slightly better there, but it's just huge, right? Because what we have to do now essentially is just be perfect. And in this league that's constantly improving, and with the issues that we currently have, I just don't know if that's going to be possible. I definitely think we should try. We should fight for every point. We shouldn't, and definitely the Real Madrid players in their mind shouldn't think, oh, well, it's now over, so let's just, you know, focus on the Champions League. We should try to win every single match in La Liga. I just think even with us trying our hardest, it's going to take something extraordinarily bad on Barcelona's end for us to win it. So, yeah, in my mind, I'm starting to accept that we're probably not going to have the La Liga trophy in our cabinet this year. But I'm open to being completely wrong here.
How many points back were we when Zidane took over in his first year? 10?
10, yeah.
We came within one, I think, right?
Yeah, and that was the result of an extraordinary collapse from Barcelona. So let's hope that happens.
That Barca team was better than this year's Barca team.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Another crucial point.
Yeah. But, you know, let's just not even entertain that idea. Let's just keep our expectations low.
Yeah, I would, and understand that there are a lot of other factors. I mean, look, there are a lot of factors. This Barcelona team is arguably overperforming. Like, it is. This is one of the best starts from the history of the league for Barcelona.
Yeah,
they dropped 2 points. So, like, is this team that is noticeably and uncontroversially worse than it was last year, suddenly, you know, going and being perfect, is that a result of them being better? No. So, like, there is some other stuff going on here, but and so you would expect some of that form to even out. But even if it evens out, as part of the issues, even if it evens out, and even if Madrid's form improves over the course of the season, it's not obviously enough to get back to where we were. But again, I wouldn't rule it out, and I think it's more likely than a lot of the people who are just giving up. But that's incredibly low bar. So, all right. Anton Hackberg wants us to talk a little about Casemiro. So, was I mistaken, or did it look like Casemiro faked getting knocked out? No, I don't think he faked getting knocked out, dude. I think he actually got smacked in the face by that dude's elbow. Like, that was a really – he took a knock. And
when was this?
I can't remember this, to be honest.
Yeah.
This is in the second half, towards the middle part of the second half. He just got – got rammed. I mean, he rammed into some guy, and his elbow or his shoulder went into Casemiro's face, and like, it wasn't intentional, and it was just a tough collision. But if you look at like American football, you always tell people to tackle with your shoulders because it's the hardest place to hit someone with when they're running at them. And like, he took a really hard knock. That's why he was on the ground. I don't know if he pretended to be knocked out while he was there, if he was genuinely just dazed. So I mean, it almost doesn't matter.
I don't remember this at all, but I just assume that Casemiro, of all people, wouldn't fake it because he's one of the toughest guys on the squad, and he prides himself in physically dominating opponents, so I just don't think it's in his character to do that.
And were we losing at that point? I was probably writing my reaction or something, but if we were losing or tied, then there's another devil's advocate of him not faking it just to get on with the game.
Yeah, certainly. Let's see. Christopher McCormick. Can we all agree this is Ohm's fault?
Yes.
So what I think he's referring to here is because I think he tweeted at me because I said, like, in the 91st minute or whatever, now would be a really good time for Sergio Ramos to start scoring from set pieces again. And everyone was like, oh, this is your fault, because last year I wrote an article titled Deciphering the Secrets Behind Sergio Ramos's Set-Piece Wizardry, And since then, he hasn't scored a single goal from a set piece. So obviously that's just a coincidence, but then people have been having a lot of fun with me saying that, oh, I gave up all Ramos' secrets and now teams know how to stop him and that's why he hasn't scored from a set piece.
We got so much shit on our Facebook page and that one guy who was upset that we kept revealing our tactics.
Oh yeah, that guy
was fucking love that.
Maybe he was right in hindsight.
That guy rules. Yeah, that guy was first of all totally right, and also if he is still around, like come on, like let us know what you think about where we are now, because I've been hearing all the time from the Benzema can't score a goal guy, like constantly. The dude is emailing me all the time. I don't know how to block someone on email, so I just keep getting them, and like I still think they're really funny, but like and now that he found out that I have like a public email address, like I'm just getting hammered with it, and like I should have blocked him on Twitter by now also, but I didn't because, again, like, he's actually pretty funny. And, like, but, yeah, like, I'm into it. So if you're listening to this podcast, Benzema can't score a goal guy, I don't think you speak English very well, but if you do, like, you can come on the show. Like, I want to talk to you because, like, I think you care a lot and, like, that's admirable. And, like, the guy who was pissed off about Ohm revealing the team's secrets, you're also invited because I'm interested in where you get the belief that we can affect team policy. all right, is the diamond finished, Ohm?
Okay, so I've been critical of it since the beginning because I thought, well, it doesn't really suit our personnel, right? Because what you want is two box-to-box midfielders who can effectively shuttle from flank to flank and defend the wings. And I was surprised with how Kroos and Modric handled it. And I was also surprised with how ineffective teams were at exploiting our lack of horizontal compactness within that formation. And, you know, they sort of did. And we looked slightly defensively weaker than we did in the 4-3-3. But Isco was just thriving in that attacking midfield role. And we designed that formation for him once Bale went down. And we just overpowered opponents all the way through to the final. And then this season, we went back to it because Bale went down, right? And I just think teams they finally started to figure it out. Against Tottenham, they were very effective at moving the ball to the wings and countering down those sides. And we really saw it here. There was a clear game plan from Hirona to shift the ball from side to side and try to attack those spaces and isolate our fullbacks one versus one because they saw that there were gaps there. And couple that with our lethargic performance, you know, our disorganization, you know, players were not in the right positions a lot of the time. You know, it was a recipe for disaster. So I think playing this diamond perfectly probably wouldn't have resulted in being exposed that much. But I do think it's time to move on because teams have figured it out. And, you know, that's just how football is. You know, if you play a formation that plays to certain strengths and exposes certain weaknesses, eventually teams will figure it out, and we just got to keep evolving. So it was really good for us. It won us the Champions League. It won us the La Liga title. But we got to
move it around, too. And when Bale comes back, it'll be helpful to maybe transition back to a 4-3-3 occasionally, too. So Ramin Nagy asks us and if that's, if I'm mispronouncing your name, just let us know. I like Lucas, but he really should not be ahead of Ceballos in the rotation. By the way, do you think Valencia can win the league? So we already discussed the Lucas-Ceballos thing. I think we all agree that Ceballos adds a real important addition to the squad that Zidane hasn't really been taking advantage of as much as any of us think. In terms of Valencia, I don't know. Keon, what do you think?
This is a stretch. It's a big stretch. But, you know, my prediction before the season was they'd make Europe. For sure they're going to make Europe now and probably make the Champions League because I really think they're legit and Marcelino's done an amazing job. And they're deep. Like, you know, they can sustain this because they're actually pretty deep. You know, they're able to give Parejo rest if they wanted to. You know, they have pretty good wingers off the bench. And for them to win the league, they need Barca to stop dropping points. They need Real Madrid to effectively just not catch up, and Atlético to keep playing bad. It would take a huge, huge effort for them to win the league. I'm going to say no. They can, of course, they won. They can, but I don't think they will.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree with everything Keon said.
All right, Nate McDougal. So Nate hates to say it, but La Liga is over. which really sucks because since 2004-2005, Barca have won 8 La Ligas and Real Madrid has only managed 4. With this Liga, they will have more than double our domestic trophies in this time span. I love dominating Europe, don't get me wrong, but it's really annoying watching your greatest rival dominate you domestically. Yes, that is annoying. I mean, it's infuriating and annoying, and these players don't seem to give a shit about it as much as the Barca players do, and that's infuriating, and that sucks. And you know what else sucks is listening to so much of the Barca fan base complain all the time about how the referees in La Liga are screwing them over and how they're for Real Madrid when you actually look at the results and you look at all of the numbers about that. And you can basically statistically prove that it's exactly the fucking opposite. So just don't give me any of that bullshit. Like, it's so stupid. And, like, yeah, obviously, sorry. And I know that's off track, but I saw another thing today posted on a Barcelona website about how, like, Barcelona should go to France if Catalunya, if La Liga kicks them out, which they won't, but they should go to France. Because the referees will be better and will be less biased. Can you imagine the fucking bullshit that goes into thinking that? God damn it.
Wasn't the second goal for Girona a little bit offside?
Yes.
It was offside.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's our argument right there to that whole article. Or
I'm so tired of that shit, dude.
We have like a 300-year sample size that the La Liga referees are just bad. Not in favor of anyone. They're just bad. They're bad for every single team. Every single team in La Liga gets screwed every single match day.
These guys talk about it like the La Liga referees Tebas walks up to them with this huge bag of cash with like a dollar sign on it and is like, make sure that you call an unfair offside anytime Messi gets the ball with a chance to score. It's like it's just absolutely nonsense. So, all right, sorry. Off topic. João Z dos Santos wants us to talk a little about this match. So what happened in this game? I know it's too early to consider removing Zidane, but surely something has to change. So this what happened in this game? Well, we talked about that already. it's too early to consider removing Zidane. Yes, it is. So, I don't know. That's all I have to answer. I don't have anything else to say.
I mean, I think it's kind of asking for solutions, right? And we kind of discussed that.
We don't
really know. I mean, I guess it's just going back to the basics, right? Zidane, looking at his tactical plan and saying, well, we need to be more disciplined, we need to be more structured, and the players themselves being more motivated to win games, which I think is going to happen now.
Yeah, and maybe, literally maybe bringing in some players like Ceballos or even Teo occasionally or a little bit more just because, they didn't win La Liga last year or in the Champions League last year. They may feel a little bit more hungry. And if you start incorporating them into the rotation a little bit more, maybe they'll push some of the players that feel like their position is untouchable to give more of a shit about the games against the bottom half of the table side that actually is much better than anyone has been suggesting. Like, this Girona side is much better than their record suggested going into this match. So, one easy solution or suggestion.
I still don't think this team is that far away from clicking into gear. Like, to be honest, I
agree with that.
I know it was today it just really should hit the fan, but it got worse and worse, and then today was like rock bottom. But basically, and then there was a question earlier about the diamond. I also don't, I'm not necessarily giving up on that either. I was really skeptical about it, if it would work, when we first implemented it towards the tail end of last season. And I quickly realized, like Om said, it brings the best out of Isco. But the fact that you have Modric and Kroos, two brainiacs, and then you throw Isco just roaming, helping everybody, whether it's providing an outlet for the wingbacks or giving Modric and Kroos an extra person to play with in the midfield, and the interchangeability of Kroos and Casemiro and Modric, all of that just surprised me. I was like, wow, this is really fun to watch and really hard to stop. The overlapping runs in the fullbacks. There was just so many ways that Real Madrid could have hurt you in that scheme. And I don't think I'm not necessarily giving up on it. I think a lot of the issues were, a lot of them were just mental miscues. And it's not like it needs a complete tactical overhaul. I do agree with the idea that what Gabe just said about bringing in players like Ceballos more. Like, if we don't have James and Morata, we need to find those two players.
And Lucas Vázquez does not seem to...
Yeah, and maybe just not try the same thing that never works. Like, every day. Like, just let Ceballos see if he can develop into a...
Try it out, yeah. Try something else. All right, Jimmy Obeid, I think, is going to speak for a lot of us. This has legitimately been the worst day of the year for me. That sucks, dude. I'm sorry. I know that I'm sure there's got to be some other stuff, because, like, obviously this game sucked, but, you know... Yeah, all the other stuff I'm sure sucks too. And we're sorry, buddy. Like, that sucks. So, I mean, we're here for you to talk. And obviously, we're all in a bad mood also. So, have some scotch, talk to your buddies, watch a funny movie. I know we're not finished yet, but unless we go on a win streak from now to the end of the season, I don't see us winning the league. What do you guys think? Is this also going to affect our Champions League campaign and mentality? We already talked about the Liga. So, is this going to affect our Champions League campaign? I mean, I think it's very possible that Madrid will go out in the next match and be really, really bad. But I think it's more likely, Jimmy, for what it's worth, that Madrid go out in this next match at Wembley and kick a bunch of ass. Like, I think that's very possible. Yeah. Just because, like, the way the team was talking after this match, you could tell that they were in no state to take any shit. So we'll see.
This is kind of connected to the earlier question, too, about why does Barcelona have way more La Liga titles than Real Madrid in the past decade or so, dozen years. And I think the answer is essentially that Real Madrid are better in big games than they are consistently over the course of the season. And that is, like, historically backed up. So, like, yeah, it might affect our performance in Champions League, but historically it hasn't. Real Madrid once finished fifth in La Liga and won the Champions League. They never ever win the double when they win the Champions League too. So it hasn't in the past. So
yeah, I mean, it's just, we seem like a different team in the Champions League, not just in the past, but we've seen it this season. I think Ronaldo has 5 goals in 3 games, and it, you know, all the problems that we had in the league just didn't seem to appear in the Champions League, aside from a couple of tactical things. It's like we're just a different team there, and we've approached that, you know, we've been more clinical, we've created just as many chances, we've defended better. So I would be surprised if we underperform in that game because of our La Liga results.
Yeah.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense to me. All right. Semra wants us to talk about injuries. That's a good point. We haven't talked about this enough. Out of all the players out injured, who is the one that is desperately needed at this point?
Carvajal.
Carvajal. I mean, look, I think Carvajal, Bale is obviously incredibly important for this team. Yeah. So Carvajal and Bale are the two obvious. And the reason that they're, I mean, like, is because they both would be starting in this match. Like, Ashraf, it's just not at the level, right? So Carvajal is the obvious one because Madrid is starting not just a lower than world class player, but like about a league average player right back. Obviously he can be better and he's getting better, and it's amazing that he's league average at right back at 18 years old. But fundamentally, like, we're talking about right now results, and right now Ashraf is a guy who was just playing last season in Segunda B. So, like,
yeah,
Carvajal is the obvious answer.
The drop off from Carvajal to Ashraf is way more than from Bale to, like, Isco or Benzema.
Right.
You know, Kovacic is another one that he would obviously been really nice to have around. But I think the thing with that one is that once Kovacic comes back, you almost get the feeling Ceballos will just be pushed back even farther. Mm-hmm. So I don't even know what happens there.
I don't know. We'll see. That's, again, a good problem to have. I'm a little annoyed that Zidane has, again, favored Lucas Vázquez over Ceballos. It's infuriating and incomprehensible, but
A lot of people think that just because of the different positions, but I really think Ceballos is versatile enough that he can roam through multiple channels and help defensively and do all that.
Hopefully he'll show it. I mean, he's been really towards the top of that players when he started. I mean, like, obviously in his Liga match where he bagged 2 goals, and then against Fuenlabrada, I thought he was probably the best player on the pitch. So, you know, we'll see. Nick DiStefane, all right, this is a good question. I don't know when the time to freak out officially begins, but I'm worried. 19 goals through 10 league games is below our standard. Is this a coaching problem? Just my opinion, but Vasquez cannot continue to get opportunities over Ceballos. Yeah, we all agree. Also worried about Cristiano. What is going on? Also, all due respect to Girona, they were fantastic. What does this team need? So I think we've answered two out of these three questions. Let's quickly mention, so is this a coaching problem, Ohm?
I mean, I never want to bring it down to one thing, right? Because, like, I feel like in the multitude of factors that have affected us, if one of them is different, we're okay. I think to a certain extent it is, because it's Zidane's job to keep these boys motivated and as sharp as they were previously. And I don't know if he's been as effective in doing that this season. And also, obviously, like today, from what I saw, there were some tactical problems. And then in the previous league match, you know, he had issues with making this team too fluid, and you know, he was trying to figure out how he should structure his team. So we kind of seem to be in a weird time of tactical transition where Zidane's kind of trying to move to something else, and he's not really achieving that at the moment. And I'm speaking in like a philosophical sense, not necessarily in like a formational sense. So, yeah, I think there's a little bit on Zidane's shoulders. But like I said, there's a lot of factors that play into it. And I don't want to give the impression that it's all on Zidane.
No, it's almost like 50-50 to me, because is it Zidane's fault that Real Madrid sometimes just don't look prepared or motivated? Sure. Is it Zidane's fault, you know, that he continually does make weird subs that don't really influence the game in a positive way? Sure. Is it the player's fault that, you know, is it Zidane's fault that a lot of players have hit the post this season and dropped points and missing chances and open nets? Is it Zidane's fault that nobody picked up Maffeo? Like a very clear instinctive thing that players should just recognize in the moment, you know, leading up to the second goal. I don't know. This is, to me, there's an elephant in the room. It's that over the past two seasons, Kroos has this weird kink where he jogs back in like every defensive transition. I don't know if it's by design where Zidane says just conserve your energy and just act as an outlet once, and you know, to start the counter. But this is something that Kroos does. Like, you can go back to every game and you can see it. He just jogs back when we're outnumbered in defense. I don't know what it is, but it's something that hurt us today.
You and I have, I think, talked about this before on previous podcasts, where Kroos doesn't necessarily hurry back. And going back to Zidane, I think something he can definitely change, when Nick asked, what does this team need? I think we need to start respecting La Liga sides that are lower down the table, and that La Liga sides that we think aren't necessarily as good as us, because...
I totally agree with that.
Because we've seen, like... Because last season, our problem wasn't against the big sides, right? It was against the mid-table to teams lower down the table. And it was because, like, you'd look at Zidane and be like, whoa, dude, you just put in this beautiful, like, tactical performance versus Sevilla or Atletico Madrid or Bayern, and then what the hell is going on here, right? Like, I think Zidane needs to take that same level of application and apply those level of tactics to these lower-level teams. Because, sure... Yeah. We're more talented, and you know, that could be a reason we win, but why take that risk? I don't see the reason for why, like, we can't take what we did against Barcelona in the Super Cup, which was just a superb performance from Zidane's end, and do it here, because you compare the two tactical performances, they just aren't on the same level, and they don't need to be perfectly on the same level, but it shouldn't be that big of a drop off. Like, we need to start respecting lower opposition, because they can beat us if we're not on the top of our game.
Yeah. Totally. All right, guys. So sorry took. I mean, like, this has been we're in a bad mood. This is a down episode. I hope you guys took some, you know, comfort from hearing us all kind of reminisce and talk a little bit about this stuff. And because, like, the truth is that, you know, it sucks, and it sucked today to watch the side lose to a team that they shouldn't lose to. But we chug on. This is October still. And there's a lot more soccer and a lot more Real Madrid to watch this season, and a lot more exciting things will happen. So, you know, don't despair. I know I've been saying like people making these jokes, man. Like, chill. It's gonna be okay. Like, even if this isn't a great season, like, this team is still really good and everything's gonna be all right. I promise.
Patron
all
right, guys. Shout-outs?
Patron shoutouts.
Let's do it. Patreon.com/managingmadrid. As you all know, you can get all kinds of cool rewards beyond the ones that Gabe already mentioned. There's a bunch of other ones too, so check it out and join our army. And one of the rewards, if you pledge $10 or more, you get a specific shout out on the podcast. So shout out to all of our amazing podcast patrons, and shout out to these patrons specifically who do pledge $10 or more. Okay, you ready? I'm going to need to put an oxygen mask on for this soon. Nick DeStefane, Frederick Sundros, Doug Chisholm, Leon Stavranakis, Bjorn Salvador, John Fernandez, Said Mahad, Bavik Shah, Sergio Monleon, Red Bat, Anthony Vasquez, Yahya Ibrahim, Kenny Gulsler, Gulet Ishmael, Nick Ribeiro, Eric Rogers, Steven Mendes, Andrew Gomez, Anton Hackberg, Jimmy Obeid, Daniel Smith.
All right. Woo!
Legends.
Thank you all so much. This is only possible because of you guys. Thank you. All right. So we will be back on, obviously, for the midweek show. So toss us a couple bucks if you want to listen to that. We'll be probably breaking down the Spurs game. Obviously, I already mentioned the Ernesto interview that I'm going to be pushing out to the RSS feed. Check that out. I think it'll be really interesting. Do you guys have anything else? Obviously, like, check out Ohm's article breaking down this game if you can stomach reliving it. it'll be on Outside of the Boot. And then, Keon, do we have any important, you know, things that we're doing this week on Managing Madrid?
Yeah. Chutos y Tacticas podcast going up tomorrow with Diego. He'll probably shed some light on the whole Catalonia thing, too, in conjunction to your RSS feed upload. But also, I'll be doing a mailbag this week. And if you're a patron, you're going to get prioritized your questions. So send me a message on... There's a post on Patreon on our page asking for mailbag questions if you have any. So check it out.
All right. Good talking to you both. We'll talk to you on midweek show. And until then, a la Madrid.
A la Madrid.
A la Madrid.